Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. From boosted parlays to in-game odds and every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today and receive a $500 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGPN on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And next, we're brought to you by PicksWise. PicksWise is the number one home of free sports betting picks. Visit PicksWise.com to make your next bet better. And finally, we're brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com with promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in the Best Ball Mania 2 contest for a chance to win $1 million. That's right, $1 million at UnderdogFantasy.com. And finally, before we get with the episode, I do want to remind you guys to download the SGPN app. We are giving you a chance to win $100,000 in our NFL Week 1 contest, but you can only get that exclusively on the SGPN app, which you can download in the Apple or Google Play Store today. Hi-li-ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 67. We'll throw this one out to basketball legend Taj Gibson, who played for the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Chicago Bulls, wore 67 with the Timberwolves. I think he's the only guy in NBA history to wear 67, so there's that. So shout-out, Taj Gibson. I, of course, am Daniel Gubby Vreeland. I am typically the associate host of this here podcast, but as you can hear in your ears once again, I am leading the show today instead of Juicy Jeff Fox, who continues to be on vacation. He previously had taped this episode with me. We sometimes do a little bit ahead of time work when we know he's going to be on vacation. We taped this episode last Wednesday, me and Juicy Jeff, and this card absolutely fell apart, had new fights booked, got just absolutely crazy scrambled, and what we had recorded was unsalvageable. So, luckily, I am Daniel Gumby Vreeland, and you can find me on Twitter, at Gumby Vreeland, and all my writings at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Luckily, I was bailed out with having a phenomenal co-host. You heard him on Sunday join us, and you will hear him on next Sunday as well to join us for the breakdown of, review of this card, rather. But luckily, I have him in tow once again to help us out, and that is the host of the Fix Fights podcast, Kurt Chase Patrick. Kurt, thanks for bailing us out on this one.
Hey, man, like I said on Sunday, it's always a pleasure talking MMA, so I'm always down. If Jeff keeps going on vacation, I'm always down to fill in, man. I wish I could vacation, though, as much as him, it seems, right?
Yeah, he's getting a couple of nice vacations, although I do think one of his absences was less of a vacation, but he has had a couple of them. He's had vacations than the majority of us, and yeah, luckily, we do have people here to fill in. Now, before we get to talking about MMA, I am going to, and I didn't preface this at all. As you guys know, we do almost no prep work here on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. So I did want to just quickly get your quick take on this, because it seems like combat sports, not quite MMA, but it feels wrong to not mention that this is happening this week. But Tyron Woodley is about to box one of the Paul brothers. It seems like I mess up every single time I'm trying to say which one. Jake Paul? Jake Paul sounds...
Oh, it is, yes.
Jake Paul sounds right today. He's about to box Jake Paul. I'm going to ask you this. On a scale from 1 to 10, how confident are you in MMA's boy here, Tyron Woodley?
If I have to give you a 1 to 10, I would say a 7. And I think it's both Tyron Woodley and what he brings to the table. And also the big thing for me, and Ben and I actually, I don't want to tear our podcast too much, but we had a boxing expert, Jeremy Harridges, on the show this past week. And what we had discussed, especially on the Jake Paul side of things, is, especially in my point of view, I don't know how Jake Paul is going to react when he actually gets hit with a punch. We have not seen it yet. He fought, you know, some dork from YouTube, and then he fought Nate Robinson, a basketball player, and then he fought Ben Askren. And honestly, dude, I would have told you 10 out of 10 I was confident in Ben Askren going into that fight, and we saw what happened with Ben. Didn't come in shape, doesn't have hands to begin with. Tyron has hands. He's shown knockout power his whole career, and I really do like what he showed in his last fight against Vicente Luque. Although he lost that fight, he was willing to go out there and kind of die on his sword. I just got Tyron Woodley here, man. I just think he hits really hard. He's got good hands, and I don't think Jake Paul is going to react good when he gets hit with a legit punch and gets stunned and has to battle back.
And it's also kind of worth noting, too, I feel like in breaking down this fight, like, you usually think about the path to victory here, and, like, Jake Paul, like you said, he's fought a dork on YouTube, and he knocked out Ben Askren with one punch. It's not like Tyron Woodley is easily knockoutable. You know what I mean? Like he is a guy who's got a freaking chin. Whether or not we like really bought, I mean, if you were saying that Tyron Woodley was washed at the end of his career, like I don't know necessarily that I buy it. His performances weren't great, but like losses to Kamaru Usman, Gilbert Burns, Colby Covington, and Vicente Luque are hardly enough to say that this guy can't fight anymore. And in addition to that, he's lost by TKO or KO twice in his whole career. Once was the Colby Covington rib injury, and yes. Once was the fourth round against Nate Marquardt in that Strikeforce title fight all the way back in 2012. So this dude basically hasn't been knocked out for almost 10 years, almost a decade since he's been legitimately knocked out. So I almost feel like you can take that off the table as a possibility for Jake Paul, and then we're just talking about, like, can he keep a good pace and actually just outbox Tyron Woodley? And while you're at it, like you said, he's got power. Stay away from the big punch. It's worth noting that the odds on these fights, currently, the last odds I saw was Paul at negative 200 and Tyron Woodley at plus 160.
That's crazy to me.
It's nuts, but like, I mean, it's almost, I'm not going to compare him to Conor McGregor because that feels wrong, but it's almost like the way odds come in on Conor McGregor fights, right? Like, his odds are always way crazy in the wrong direction all the time, right? Like, he got beat by Dustin Poirier, and he was a favorite in the rematch. Like, how crazy, and it was only 6 months later. So, like, that hype and the way that they hype themselves tends to play into it. But, I think plus 160 on Tyron Woodley is crazy, because like you said, I might just take him straight up. I'd love to see what a KO prop looks like, although I haven't seen that yet. I'm sure they're out there, so feel free to take a look at those. We will not be logging official picks on this, but I think you can tell where the couple of MMA heads are on this one, and in general, just what people in the world are hoping happens in this fight.
I will say this too, like, I wouldn't call myself a Jake Paul fan by any means, but I'm not one of these haters where, like, I kind of respect what he's doing. And to me, he feels like, you know, say what you will about him, he's an asshole, you know, maybe, you know, like his character all that much, but the guy definitely puts himself in the right situations to succeed, right? It seems like he trains very hard. He trains with the right people. Obviously, he's got the money to bring in whoever he needs to get the proper training. So I will say that for him. And if he does win this fight, say what you will about Tyron Woodley, but if he does win this fight and he does knock Tyron Woodley out or something crazy like that, I think it is time to maybe reevaluate a little bit and start, you know, taking this guy a little bit more seriously. I mean, he can go any which way after this fight with opponents, but it seems like he is doing the right things to succeed in a sport that – we thought we would see him in.
Yeah, and I think you're right about putting himself in the position to succeed. It's not like he went in there, got a win over a YouTuber or a win over, you know, the worst boxer that MMA has ever seen. Not ever seen. That's being harsh on Ben Askren. But a guy who is essentially a grappler in a boxing match, and then he was, like, up against one of the great boxers of all time, or, like, he put himself in there with a 20-0 pro. I mean, like, he's building himself up slowly. He's building himself up with people who he knows have name value to them, right? Like, people know who Tyron Woodley is. Like, he went from beating a UFC guy to beating a UFC champion if he beats Tyron Woodley. So, yeah, the trajectory, really smart for him, I think. And, like, he's not putting himself in too big of a pond right away, which I think is pretty smart, especially from a boxing perspective, because that tends to be how boxers build themselves up, is little bit by little bit.
That's the thing, too. It's like, if you look at boxing, you know, especially the top guys, I mean, they're coming into their first big fight with, like, 24-0 records, 22-0 records, and if you look at their early career, it's not like they're fighting studs off the rip, which you see pretty often in MMA, right? I mean, Ciryl Gane's about to fight for the world heavyweight title with 9 pro fights. I mean, how often do you see that, aside from, like, Vasily Lomachenko in boxing?
Yeah, you never see it. And I'll go one further than that, too, is that, like, yeah, we're talking about Ciryl Gane fighting guys like that, you know, right off the jump, being that, like, this is his only 11th pro fight he's going to be fighting him. But if you even go back to his regional circuit, dude, his regional circuit's crazy, too. He fought Adam, I'm going to say his last name wrong, Dzika, who is a TKO champion, which is a promotion, who's right now is 7-1 in his career. His only loss is to Ciryl Gane. And that was Ciryl's second fight he fought this dude. The dude was 7-0, and he lost to Ciryl. And, like, he hasn't fought MMA since then, which sucks for him, but, like, he was a 7-0 champ of a very good Canadian promotion, went out there, took a fight with a dude who was 1-0, and that's MMA, whereas boxing, you know, like, that 7-0 guy is fighting somebody who's, you know, got one of those Jay Ellis...
3-18 record.
Yeah, yes. or one of those Jay Ellis MMA records, the 12-88, or something like that, so, like... Yeah, like, it is what it is, but, yeah, like, I think you're 100% right. If he beats Woodley, we should take him seriously, and regardless, he's doing the right things. So you gotta give him credit for that. Now, speaking of the right things, I would be remiss if I did not mention that this episode of the MMA Gambling Podcast is brought to you by WynnBET. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. They are bringing you the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play with exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in on all of your favorite teams, players, and sports from the NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and so many more. Great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WynnBET. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, they have what it takes for you to win. Ready to play? Sign up today and receive a special offer, a risk-free $500 sports bet. Download Bet Win with the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning. All right, so I use that phenomenal transition to get us to the actual dance where we are, which is UFC Vegas 35, I believe we're calling this one. I do hate the numbering system, but I believe that's what we're going by now, which is Barboza versus Chikadze, and not only Edson Barboza versus Giga Chikadze, but also the Ultimate Fighter 29 finale, jammed all into one action-packed card. It is an exciting one, and we will start, as we like to do, at the very bottom of the card. So we are going to start with Mono Martinez versus Guido Chinetti. So we'll start with Mono Martinez, who is making a short-notice debut. He's 8-2 in his career with 8 knockouts. He's got 2 straight wins. He was 0-1 on the Dana White Contender Series. He's going to have 4 inches of height advantage, 2 inches of reach advantage, and he is, get this, 17 years younger than Guido Chinetti, which is an insane stat. And as you guys know, we've been tracking age stats, and people who are significantly younger like that tend to have much better records. He also has the striking advantage in the striking stats that we typically track, and he is, as a result, a -320 favorite. Guido Chinetti goes by the nickname El Ninja. He is 8-5 in his career. He's got 3 knockouts, 3 submissions. 4 of his 5 losses are by submission, which is worth noting. He's 2-4 in the UFC, 1-3 in his last four. He was KO'd last in March of 2020. He was 0-2 on the Ultimate Fighter. He is the more active striker in the striking stats we have. Of course, those are a small sample size for Mano Martinez, and he is the better grappling stats off the jump, too. He comes in at plus 290. Kurt, what do you think of these two?
Man, I think you laid it out pretty much in your lead-up. I mean, the significant age advantage, he's got less miles on him. I'm riding with Mano Martinez here. I just think, yeah, the age, the skills. I like him at the, I mean, what is this, like minus 275, 265 in a different, a lot of places. I like those odds. I'm going with Mano Martinez.
Yeah, I like him. I even think the odds are probably should be further and further apart. And they might move further and further apart as we get to fight week, because this dude throws hammers. Like, if you've seen any of his regional fights, like, some of his knockouts are insane. And Guido's coming off of being knocked out, which is never a good sign when you take 2 years off and the first thing that happens to you is your brain gets turned into jelly in 3 minutes. So, like, not a great thing. And while we're talking about Mano Martinez being on short notice, he has gone through, like, seven different training camps for fights recently that got pulled or moved or whatever. So the dude is ready. I think he's probably been training for this for a while, so I think he's ready. I think he probably just blasts Guido Cannetti on the feet here and does so really early. So
I think so, too. Yep.
Yeah, and we'll get to props that we might like a little bit later in the show, but one I'm earmarking already is you can find a Mano Martinez by knockout prop or even Mano Martinez in the first round. I think those props probably play out really well because he comes out like an absolute wrecking ball, doesn't seem to fade, and Guido Cannetti, like I said, looks a little shaky on the feet. He's getting older, getting slower. It ain't going to go well for Guido in this one. And that brings us to our second fight that we are set off to break down, and that is Pat Sabatini versus Jamal Emmers. Jamal, pretty boy. Emmers, 18-5 with 7 knockouts and 3 submissions. He is 1-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight, which was back in August of 2020, so a decent layoff here. He's almost been away for a year. But as we talked about before, people who have been out for at least a year have about a 60% win percentage over the last 3 years, which is pretty crazy and kind of an interesting stat. But as I like to say, getting your head bounced around like a basketball regularly, probably not good for your health, and sometimes taking a break is. So Jamal Emmers, last fought in 2020, he is 0-1 on the Dana White Contender Series, made it to the UFC anyway via being the LFA champ. He's going to have 2 inches of height advantage, 4 inches of reach advantage. He is 3 times more of an active striker than Sabatini. Once again, those are very limited stats for Sabatini, who has only had 1 UFC fight, and Emmers, who's only had 2, so we got some pretty limited stats there. He has the grappling advantage as well. Sabatini, on the other hand, 14-3. He's got 2 knockouts and 9 submissions, 1-0 in the UFC, and 3 straight wins. He'll be 1 year younger and have the striking stats slightly in his favor, plus 125. And before we go to breaking down this fight, I also do need to mention that I'm supposed to, in addition to throwing my picks and Kurt's picks in here, despite the fact that Juicy Jeff could not join us today, I do have his picks for every single fight, so I will be penciling them in afterwards. He also took Mano Martinez, so you can put all 3 of us behind Mano Martinez in this one. All right, back to Pretty Boy Emmers versus Pat Sabatini. Sabatini betting off at 125, Emmers negative 155. Who do you like here?
This is a really, really good fight. I honestly think this is probably one of the better fights on this card.
Totally
agree.
It's
really flying under the radar.
It's a great fight. Yeah, I totally agree.
Ben actually put me onto Jamal Emmers prior to his UFC debut. By the way, who was against the main event on this card, Giga Chiakadze. I like Emmers here. The odds are relatively close, which I think is completely fair. But I like Emmers. I like his style. I thought he picked up a nice win in his last fight, so my money is on Emmers in this one.
I like that. I like the thought process there, especially because he did look so good last. He actually looked really good against Giga Chiakadze.
I agree.
It was a split decision loss, and some people were pissed in Emmers' favor. I thought Giga won, but like, man, that judge did make a case for him, and it wasn't even a bad one. It wasn't even where I was like, you fucking kidding me? This is a split decision. It was like, oh, this is this is a legitimate split decision. I also like Emmers, but I'm going to take Sabatini in this one, mostly just because I think the question comes down to me for whether or not one of them has a wrestling advantage, because I think both of them are going to try to wrestle. While Emmers has got the reach advantage and the height advantage here, and ultimately I think he's going to outstrike Sabatini, I do think the wrestling advantage goes to Sabatini. I think he just gets a few more takedowns. He gets in on the legs better. His pressure's really good. So I'm going to lean Sabatini on this one, especially because I like the dog money. It is worth noting before we move on to the next fight that Jeff also took Pretty Boy Emmers, so I am out on an island here on Sabatini. And like I said, mostly I'm just trusting his wrestling enough because I'm a sucker for like two or three different training camps. And I somewhat to a fault pick those fighters off of those training camps. One is Fortis MMA, and another one lately is Daniel Gracie Jiu-Jitsu out of Philly, because Pat Sabatini, Sean Brady, we're going to talk about Andre Petrovsky later on in the show, Jeremiah Wells, these dudes are all very fun wrestler grapplers coming up through the ranks, and I'm going to put my trust in the good Daniel Gracie at Henzo Gracie Philly, that he will bring... He will bring some grappling chops for Sabatini here. And that brings us to our next fight, which is a women's flyweight fight, which is important to note in this fight because it is women's flyweight with a somebody who has fought almost exclusively at strawweight, and that is Vanessa Demopoulos, who is nicknamed the Little Monster, and she is fighting JJ Aldrich. So we'll start with Aldrich. She is 9-4 with 2 knockouts. She's 5-3 in the UFC. She has alternated wins and losses in each of her last 5 fights. Win, loss, win, loss, win. She lost her last fight. She is a former Invicta fighter. She was 3-1 in Invicta. She's going to have 3 inches of height advantage. According to this, she has 6 inches of reach advantage, although that seems kind of off, but I'm not going to doubt the measurements on Demopoulos here. She is also 4 years younger, and she is 2 times more of an active striker than Demopoulos. According to the limited stats we have, of course, we only have Demopoulos's from Dana White's Contender Series. Aldrich is also the more active grappler and will be betting off here at -335. Demopoulos, meanwhile, 6-3. She's got 1 knockout, 3 submissions. She has never been finished, but she will be taking this fight on short notice. She's 1-2. In her last 3, although she did win her last fight, 0-1 on Dana White's Contender Series, and she is the former strawweight champion of LFA. She's betting off at +300. What do you think here? You got giving the newcomer, the much smaller Demopoulos, any chance here?
I want to say yeah, but I just think the cards are a bit stacked against her. Like you said, JJ Aldrich, too, I mean, she's got a 9-4 record, but if you look at some of the names she's fought, you know, Danielle Taylor, solid. Probably she got a win over Pollyanna Viana, solid. Fought Maisie Barber, Courtney Casey in her last fight. She took a split decision win. I just think she has more experience. She's been training for this fight. She's got the size advantage. I just think too many things are in Aldrich's favor. I think she's going to be able to just grind out. It's a tough, hard-fought win because I think Demopoulos will make it tough for her. But, yeah, I'm riding Aldrich here.
Yeah, and I and Jeff both agree with you here. All 3 of us are taking JJ Aldrich. I think the thing for me, too, is that, like, if you look at Demopoulos on the regional scene, she, like, pushes forward very, very, like, I don't want to say completely wildly, but quite wildly. She throws big haymakers, and she just moves forward. And that pressure bothers a lot of women that she fights. The problem is I don't think it's going to bother Aldrich, and inevitably it's going to lead her to a clinch with a bigger woman. And that's just going to spell trouble for her, in my opinion. Aldrich, not for anything, took down Courtney Casey a bunch of times in their last fight. And to me, that's an alarm there when you're going to be much smaller than the actual flyweight here. Which is J.J. Aldrich, who we are riding with. And before we get to our next fight, I'll tell you else who we are riding with, and that is PropSwap. We are brought to you by PropSwap, America's #1 app to buy and sell sports bets. Football season is about to kick off, and PropSwap is here to make your season the best season ever. With PropSwap, your bet doesn't even need to win in order to make money. It simply needs to improve. For instance, Trey Lance opened as a 300-1 to win the MVP this year and has already been bet all the way down to 75-1. That means if you bet $100 on Trey Lance back in May, you could sell that ticket on PropSwap today for $400. That's a $300 return before he's ever taken a snap in a regular season game. Think of PropSwap like the stock market, but for sports betting, buy low, sell high, and the average ticket seller on PropSwap makes over $500 a month just listing and selling tickets. And also, don't forget, when you're making your bets, you can go for two, make two tickets on the same team or player so that you can sell one of them for a profit and keep one to leave yourself some skin in the game. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com and download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. All right, next fight we're moving on to is in the light heavyweight division, but it is once again somebody moving up the division with Darren the Dentist Stewart and Dustin the Hanyak Jacoby. So let's talk a little bit about Darren Stewart first. He is a former 185er. As a matter of fact, he spent the majority of his career there, except for a couple of fights with Eric Anders and the odd fight here or there. He is 12-7-1 in his career. He's got 7 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 5-6 in the UFC. 0-2 most recently in the UFC. Of course, there is that one no contest put in there. He has a loss his last time out, once again to the aforementioned Eric Anders. He is surprisingly 2 years younger than Dustin Jacoby, and he has the grappling stats in his favor here. Dustin Jacoby, who is now in his second kick in the can at the UFC, is 14-5-1 overall with 9 knockouts, 1 submission. He is 2-2-1 over 2 UFC stints. Of course, he's 2-0-1 this stint in the UFC. That one draw was his last time out against Ion Cutelaba. After getting smothered and crushed in the first round, he came back to win the second and third round. He was 1-0 on the Dana White's Contender Series, 0-2 in Bellator, 0-1 in the World Series of Fighting. He has a laundry list of kickboxing and pro boxing fights. He is going to have a 3 inches of height advantage, 2 inches of reach advantage. He, of course, is actually a light heavyweight, and he's got striking and active striking stats in his favor. Who you got here, Kurt?
Hey, does that mean that the World Series of Fighting and Bellator are tougher than the UFC?
are you telling me for once that like we can maybe say that they have good fighters in it and it not sounds like absolute poppycock? I think maybe we could say
exactly.
Also, Dana White's Contender Series, possibly quite hard.
Very, very tough as well. I like Jacoby in this fight, man. I always really like him. He's on this nice little run here. He's got 4 straight wins. He did have the draw to Cutelaba, which you talked about, where he took an absolute beating, kept his composure, and fought back to win the last 3 rounds. I mean, the guy has an iron chin. He stays very patient in there. He's a busy striker. And like you said, he is the true light heavyweight. I like Jacoby here, and I actually like him to get a stoppage in this fight. I think Darren Stewart is very hard to be finished. I think he's only been finished, what, maybe twice in his career? And I think both were by submission. Am I semi-correct with that?
That sounds correct to me. Let me get
that
the internet.
Yeah,
he's never been TKO'd in his whole life.
I am going to go with him getting TKO'd for the first time. I like Jacoby by stoppage, maybe in like the second or third round.
Oh, I like that. And I will say this too, like the piece for me that gives me a lot of faith in Jacoby, and I am taking Dustin Jacoby here as well, as is Jeff, who named him as his lock of the week as well. I like Dustin Jacoby a lot in this fight because, first of all, Darren Stewart, to me, came to the UFC as a guy who's a striker, right? Like, there's a reason his nickname is the Dentist, right? Like, he knocks people's teeth out. He's, you know, most of his wins are by knockout. And he just isn't a better striker than Dustin Jacoby. And now he's started to rely on his wrestling a little bit more. And Dustin Jacoby just stuffed over half of Ion Cutelaba's takedowns. Darren Stewart is not a better wrestler than Ion Cutelaba. He's not more intense, he's not stronger, he's not better technically, and he's not actually a 205er, so I think he's going to have so much trouble getting in on Jacoby. I think Jacoby's going to pick him apart. I like that thought about possibly a TKO. I'm going to, as we move on in the episode here, I'm going to slowly dig up the prop odds here for what Dustin Jacoby by TKO is, because I wonder if the fact that Stewart's never been knocked out probably gives it a nice little boost. So we'll take a look at that a little bit later on in the show. But next we're going to move on to, speaking of dudes who were formerly fighting in other weight classes, that might be the theme of this show, Sam Alvey. back at 185 pounds last fight, although he did lose that fight to Julian Marquez, fighting Wellington Turman, who used to be an 170-pounder. They're meeting in the middle at 185 pounds, which is probably at least the right weight class for Sam Alvey. So this is Smiling Sam Alvey versus the prodigy Wellington Turman, which I think he can still use the prodigy at 25 years old, whereas it's starting to sound weird on guys like BJ Penn. So Sam,
hey, don't be, there'll be no dissing BJ Penn on this show.
Look, I'm not dissing BJ Penn, but there is a brand of nicknames, and this you could probably think of other ones too. There is a brand of nicknames that at a certain point just like feel wrong, right? Like BJ Penn's 40 and on a 7-fight losing streak, including one to a guy in a bar, and I know it's a bad, sad decline for BJ Penn. I wish him the best.
BJ is my favorite, man. You're gonna make me cry on the show because we're not on video.
It has been a worse decline than most.
It really has. I cannot argue with you there.
But that's one of the things about MMA too, is that like, if you love the sport a lot, you're in it too long. Right, like the only people who have made gracious exits from the MMA world are people who didn't enjoy doing MMA. Right? Like GSP hated MMA, but he may have trained it all the time. He may have been one of the best of all time. You know, like some people would argue the best of all time. People ask him all the time, like, do you have the desire to come back? He's like, I didn't have the desire to start in the first place.
I know, it's crazy, right? Like, and he was so damn good.
Yeah, so like, you either have that very weird mentality that somehow you wound up in this sport making money, which not a lot of people do if you haven't read the news lately. you somehow wound up in this sport making a lot of money and like are afraid to exit it, or you stay too long and you're kind of fall off in a sad way. And sadly, BJ Penn is that. But back to my original point. At his age, the prodigy feels wrong. Same with Vitor Belfort still being the phenom.
Yeah.
Not really a phenom anymore, Vitor. You're quite old in your boxing Oscar De La Hoya. So yeah, I've always loved those nicknames that don't age well. And maybe Wellington Turman will come up with a better nickname after he is no longer a prodigy. If we can even say he is a prodigy.
Listen, man, Wellington Turman, and honestly both of these guys really need a win here. I mean, Wellington Turman, the prodigy, is on a
2-fight losing streak. And he's been knocked out twice.
Exactly. And Sam Alvey himself has lost 5 of 6. 5 fights, and that
weird
draw
with Da-Un Jung. Yeah. Which, yeah, by the way, of the people he's fought in that 6-fight streak, possibly the best guy on it, Da-Un Jung. Like,
yeah.
And somehow
this is a tough one to call. I got to be honest. Both guys really need a win. Sam Alvey he's tough to finish. He's one of those guys that's like tough to look good against. He's scrappy. He's shifty. But I gotta side with the favorite here. I gotta side with Wellington Turman. I like the youth. I just think he really needs a win here because his job probably is on the line, which is crazy. It might even possibly be more on the line than Sam Alvey, who's lost 5 of 6, but I'm going to go with Wellington Turman here. I don't think he's going to get Sam Alvey out of there, but I think he's going to do just enough to grind out a win over a tough veteran.
Yeah, and before we – so you didn't jump the gun. I completely forgot to give all of the stats in the very beginning because we got so into disparaging BJ Penn's name that I didn't actually rattle him off. So let me rattle him off real quick. 16-5 for Wellington Turman, 4 knockouts, 7 submissions. He's 1-3 in the UFC. As you mentioned, he had been knocked out twice in a row. And as I had previously mentioned, he was an 170-pounder, 10 years younger with the grappling stats in his favor. Smiling Sam Alvey, what a ridiculous record. 33-15-1-1 no contest, 19 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's 10-10-1 in the UFC. He's got 0-5 with a 1-0 contest in his last 6. He got submitted by Julian Marquez last time out. That also doesn't include a 1-1 record on The Ultimate Fighter. He fought at 205 pounds. He's missed weight at 185 pounds a couple of times. He was 1-1 in Bellator, which is a little-known fact. He fought his debut all the way back in 2008, which was the year after I graduated high school. He's got 2 inches of height, 3 inches of reach, and he has the active striking stats in his favor. He is a +115 dog, but both me and Jeff are actually going to go with him on this one. While I hear your things about Wellington Turman and being backed into a corner, but here's the thing I feel about Wellington Turman. First of all, being knocked out twice in a row and then fighting a guy who punches like Sam Alvey, that scares me a little bit. And then the other thing I will say that's going to get me to pick the dog money here and Sam Alvey is I think Wellington Turman can be drawn into a crazy brawl, right? Like I
agree with that.
I don't think he's the type of – like the guys who are beating Sam Alvey are people who, despite being trying to be goaded into an insane brawl, just won't be. You know, like Jimmy Crute's like, yeah, that's cute. You're going to try to draw me into a brawl. I'm going to drag you to the ground and beat the hell out of you. And like Ryan Spann's like, nope, not going to brawl with you. I'm just going to point fight you from distance. Clitson Abreu's like, we can throw three strikes per whole round as long as two of them are thrown by me and one of them is thrown by you. By the way, that fight was atrocious. it was so bad. But like, I think Wellington Turman gets suckered into that fight here, and if he does, I think there's a good chance Sam Alvey lands the big blow. So I'm gonna go with Sam Alvey, as is Jeff on this one. +115 is a juicy underdog number for me, and that'll bring my underdogs on this card up to 2 between him and Sabatini. Now, before we get on to the last fight of our prelims, let me tell you about PicksWise. PicksWise is the number one home for free sports betting picks, props, and parlays, helmed by a team of trend-watching, data-devouring sports fanatics, giving you the who, how, and why behind every prediction for every game, every day, every sport, all for free. Visit PicksWise.com to make your next bet better. PicksWise also backs responsible gambling. If you or somebody you know wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And while we're at it, let me also tell you about Prize Picks. Please visit prizepicks.com and download the Prize Pick app, where you can turn your picks into real cash with Prize Picks, my favorite daily fantasy app. It is fast, it is easy, and it all starts with Prize Picks. Simply pick two to five players and decide if they will go over or under the stat projection. And the more players you pick, the more you can win up to 10 times your money. Prize Pick is the only way I play. Now, as an example here, we've got the MLB with a big slate tonight. If I pick Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to go over 1.5 hits and walks, Miles Straw to go over 1.5 hits and walks, and Juan Soto to put up a big dud and come under the 1.5, a $20 entry on all of those would pay out $45. That's right, you're going to get 2.25 times your money on a return there. And you can use promo code SGP to receive a $100 instant deposit match up to $100. That's Prize Pick, promo code SGP. All right, the main event of the prelims is Alessio DiCirico versus Razak Al-Hassan. Monzo DiCirico, which means young bull in Italian, I'm being told, is 13-5 with 5 knockouts and 1 submission. He is 4-5 in the UFC. He had lost 3 in a row before he knocked out Joaquin Buckley in his last fight. He is taking this fight on short notice. He has 1 inch of reach advantage and will be 4 years younger with the grappling stats in his favor. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, whose nickname is Judo Thunder, he comes in at 10-4 with all 10 of those wins coming via knockout. He's 4-4 in the UFC, but he has lost 3 straight right now. He used to fight at 170, coming up to 85 here. He was 2-0 in Bellator as well, and he's got 2 inches of height advantage, as well as being the better striking stats and the better active striking stats. He's going to bet off here at +195 here. What say you, Kurt?
I 100% think this fight is this fight is definitely going to end in a finish, right? I mean, both of these guys need a win here. Abdul Razak Hassan is he's 10-10 in this career, right? 10 wins, 10 knockouts.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I'm a little bit surprised that he is such a big underdog. I would guess that these guys are pretty similar in skill level. I mean, DiCirico is coming off a win over Joaquin Buckley, but before that he had lost 3 straight. I'm going to go with the underdog here. I'm going to ride with Al-Hassan. I don't know if he gets – you know what? I'm going to stay true. I'm going to say Abdul Razak Hassan continues his knockout streak. I mean, DiCirico's only been finished by submission once in his career, never been knocked out. But I'm riding heavy with the underdog here. I'm going Al-Hassan by stoppage, by knockout.
And you are riding with Jeff, who also likes Abdulrazak Alassane in this fight. And I think I'm going to take the favorite here in Alessio Dicherco. I will say this. I hate this fight in where the odds sit, because I feel like the odds on Dicherco are inflated by that Buckley knockout.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, like, and it seems so crazy to be like, a win over Joaquin Buckley means that much. Because, like, Joaquin Buckley, what is he, 1-2 in his last three? But that one is that crazy knockout of Filipe Kasangane. So that's what we think of when we think of Joaquin Buckley. And we're like, oh, this guy knocked out that guy. And all of a sudden he's betting off at negative 200 against the guy who's pretty good at striking. But I'll say this, Dicherco also, like, low-key a decent grappler. I think sometimes people sleep on his grappling. I think he could probably – he's going to have a slight size advantage here on Alassane, being a little bit longer. I also think he's a little bit maybe stronger in the clinch than Alassane is, even though Alassane has kind of like a judo background. So I think Dicherco, just by making it, you know, like a little bit messy here, staying away from that big shot, I think he pulls this one off. But I think you're right in betting probably the under here on how deep this fight goes, because, man, do I not see this. Man, I don't see either of these guys surviving three rounds, because both of them, not only have both of them been picking up knockouts, both of them, or been dishing out knockouts, both of them get knocked out too, right? Like,
yeah, I agree.
Who is it that knocked out Abdulrazak Alassane? Oh, Chaos Williams.
Chaos Williams.
That dude hits like a truck, but like, you know, who knows? Alessio Dicherco could dish one of those out. And maybe I'm wrong on Dicherco. Has he never been knocked out? He has also never been knocked out. That is a hell of a prop there, too. So I'll dig those up when we're getting to the props portion of the show. But first, let's move on to middleweight contest between Gerald Meerschaert and Mahmoud Muradov. I do have a note here in there that when me and Jeff taped, he wanted to make sure that if we did retape, asking you, did you know what Mahmoud Muradov did before he was a UFC fighter?
I actually saw it last night. If you want to go ahead and reveal that to the audience, yeah, be my guest. But I did see it. But prior to last night, I did not know. But I saw it on Twitter last night, and I am informed as of now.
Yeah, he was he was in some autoerotic porn, so you can feel free to, if anybody out there in SGPNville is interested, you can go ahead and Google the name Ahmed Vert, which was his, did we call it a stage name? Let's call it a stage name. But I would suggest not Googling the name Ahmed Vert, but, yeah. So
he's a very, very good looking gentleman, though, I will say.
Yeah, but people seem to be into it. So anyway, let's talk about him fighting Gerald Meerschaert instead. So Muradov, let's get to Ahmed Vert first. He is 25-6 in his career with 17 knockouts, 3 submissions, 3-0 in the UFC. He's got knockouts in his last two fights. You know, he's got a sambo background. He's got a kickboxing background. He's got 1-inch height advantage. He's 3 years younger. He's got the striking and active striking stats in his favor, and currently betting off at negative 550. Gerald Meerschaert, GM3, the machine, is 32-14 in his career with 6 knockouts and 24 submissions. He's also been submitted quite a few times. 7-6 in the UFC. He's 1-2 in his last 3, coming off of a submission win in his own right. He made his pro debut in 2007. I was still in high school then. He has 2 inches of reach advantage and obviously the grappling stats in his favor. He bets off at negative plus 380, and that number is trending up. You can get him at like plus 450 in some books, but the official number we have logged here is 380. Are you giving the dog any chance, or is at least the you know, obviously here in with the D-gens, we'd say you're supposed to bet $100 on every fight or else you're not a real D-gen. Is your $100 at least somewhat smartly played with GM3?
Yeah, dude, you want to talk about lock up a card. I guess I'm kind of tipping my hat real quick, but how about the strength of schedule for Gerald Meerschaert quick before I
it's insane.
Completely slay him in a second. But yeah,
dude,
he has fought a tough, tough strength of schedule, but, dude, Mahmoud Muradov is a freaking stud. The guy is a buzzsaw. I am so high on him. He's won 14 straight fights, 3 in the UFC. I mean, dude, he had that insane flying knee in his last fight over Andrew Sanchez, the aforementioned Alessio Dicherco. I am all over Makhmud Muradov in this fight. I do think he gets Gerald Meerschaert out of there in the first round. I just think he's too dynamic. If I had to put a lock on this one, on this whole card, it is with Muradov. I know the odds are crazy. I know I would win, like, what, maybe $15 on 500, but I'll take the 50 and give me Makhmud Muradov all day.
Okay, so, and I'm going to differ with you on this one, but only only with the $100 caveat here.
I get that. That might be smarter money, maybe.
Yeah, I'm saying basically here, I believe.
No, you know what, Dan? You could just burn that. You know, instead of burning the $100, just give it to me. No, you got my Venmo. Just give me your $100.
I will say this. I think there are paths to victory for Meerschaert here. Paths to victory to me that equate to plus 400. You know, right around that line. And I will say this. I don't think Muradov has fought anybody in the UFC, at least. And granted, I haven't, you know, combed through his extensive record fighting in the Czech Republic and Poland and Slovakia. But because it's really long. Like, he's fought.
It is.
I was looking through his record, and it's like, he fought in Prague. He fought a lot in Prague. But he also fought in Noah Sol, Poland, and he fought in Austria, and he fought in Slovakia, and I was like, man, like, there's no way you even find clips on that. But I think GM3 is the best opponent he's faced so far. Alessio Dechirico took him to a decision. It was not a blowout in that fight. He did absolutely starch Trevor Smith, and, like, if you haven't watched that knockout in a while, go back and watch it. Trevor Smith falls like a video game character. It is wild how he knocks him out. I know Muradov has got the crazy power in his hands. I know that I shouldn't pick GM3, but I do believe that, like, GM3's got some good submission skills. GM3 did get knocked out crazy fast by Khamzat Chimaev, but, like, he also just needs, like, 2 seconds on the ground to sub a lot of people. And granted, yeah, Muradov's probably got better grappling backgrounds than Bartosz Fabinski or Trevin Giles, but... Man, 24 submissions on your record and 32 wins, it's enough for me to say plus 400-ish is still worth the play. So I'm crazily going to take Gerald Meerschaert in this one, and that's what I'm sticking to, whether it's a good idea or a very, very terrible idea. So before we get on to the Ultimate Fighter fights, which we're going to break down next because there are three of those in a row, let me tell you really quickly about our last sponsor, which is Paramount Plus. The summer of soccer continues on Paramount Plus. Stream over 2,000 soccer matches a year from around the world with all the heart-pounding drama from CBS Sports, including the UEFA Champions League, Europa League, Italy's Serie A, Argentina's Primera Division, the Brasileiro, NWSL, the Asian Football Confederation, and the CONCACAF qualifiers, featuring stars from the U.S. and Mexican men's national teams. Plus, much more, the best of the beautiful game with all the beautiful names like Messi, Mbappe, Ronaldo, Ramapone, and Pulisic. Be part of the excitement as champions are crowned and history is made. The world's game lives here on Paramount Plus. Visit ParamountPlus.com to start your free trial and stream every match live. Also, make sure to head on over to UnderdogFantasy.com. Use promo code SGPN for a free $25. That's right. Right now, you can get a free $25 to win $1 million on their Best Ball 2 contest. Download the app, sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com, and use promo code SGPN for your chance today. Sounds like you were going to say one more thing about my terrible GM3 pick right before I cut to that ad read. You want to throw it in there?
Wait, say that one more time. I'm sorry.
It sounded like you were gonna chop up my GM3 pick one more time. Did you have one more
thing
there?
No, you know what, dude? What I was going to say is I might have jumped the gun too quick on the biggest favorite of all time, like I was saying. Because the next fight we're going to talk about, it's, you know what, after hearing you talk about GM3 and the vet that he is, I should probably put a little bit more respect on his name. Because the next fight we're going to talk about
is worse.
Yeah, it's worse. You would spend your $100 better on Gerald Meerschaert than Michael Gilmore.
Yeah, let's get right into that. So coming off the Ultimate Fighter, a fight that, by the way, neither of these guys knew was happening until about 7 days ago, which is pretty freaking crazy, all things considered. They did not plan on putting these two on the card, and that's, of course, Andre Petrosky and Michael Gilmore, who are coming off of the Ultimate Fighter. Granted, Gilmore only came about off of half the Ultimate Fighter coming in as his last second injury replacement. Petrovsky, 5-1 in his career. He's got 5 knockouts and 2 submissions, so 100% finish rate. He took a TKO loss to end the show, or a submission loss, rather, to end the show by getting submitted by Brian Battle, who is now in the finale. He's making his UFC debut. He's 1-1 on tough. He has 1 inches of height advantage, and he is 4 years younger. He's betting off at negative 550, that same 550 you could have gotten Mahmoud Muradov at. He's fighting Michael the Gentleman Gilmore, who showed up on The Ultimate Fighter late. He's 5-3 with 3 knockouts. He has 3 submission losses on his record, all 3 of those losses by submission. He has won 2 straight. He's making his UFC debut. He went 0-1 on The Ultimate Fighter, that loss also being a submission loss. He's got 1 inch of reach advantage. He's betting off at plus 380. Tell us why Petrovsky is an even better bet than Muradov.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Maybe we didn't see enough of Michael Gilmore on the show because, again, he showed up the week of subbing in for, I forget the gentleman's name, had a knee injury and chose not to fight. And, again, he's got to fight a tough guy on the show in Brian Battle, who – surprised a lot of people. We're going to talk about him in a little bit, but it just seems Petrovsky kind of showed his style on the show, right? He likes to take you down. He's a great wrestler. He's got a good top game. I mean, he was in a battle with Brian Battle, until kind of gassing out and getting finished. But I just think for Petrovsky, I do like his wrestling. I like his grind. I think he learned a lot from the Battle fight, especially about his cardio and dealing with the grind of a grueling fight like that. Maybe we haven't seen enough of Michael Gilmore, but what we did see, this looks like it's going to be all Petrovsky. So, yes, let me put a little bit more respect on Gerald Meerschaert's name. If we're talking about $100, would I rather put $100 on Gerald Meerschaert or Michael Gilmore? Definitely Gerald Meerschaert. So, yes, Andre Petrovsky, dead wrong me on that one, is probably the biggest lock of this card against Michael Gilmore. And I do think he finishes him as well. I think he gets him out of there.
Yeah, and I have that one circled as a prop I want to talk about at the end here. Me, Jeff, and you all taking Petrovsky. It's worth noting, because I talked about it at the beginning part of the show with Pat Sabatini, he's got that Daniel Gracie jiu-jitsu style, right, where it's like, it looks like Daniel Gracie cherry-picked some, like, mean-ass Matt Hughes wrestler types and then gave them really good top submission skills, like arm triangles, guillotines, like really good versions of those, and they're just going out there and killing people because it's Sabatini, Petrovsky, and Sean Brady just doing absolute work out there. So,
yeah, I mean,
I love the style. I love what that gym's doing, and, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if they're giving him a gift in Gilmore or if Dana White feels that he owes Gilmore something in the fact that he filled in late. But, like, Gilmore is probably the guy who I would least like to see on this finale, right? Like, there were better options than Gilmore here. So
I agree with that.
Yeah, like, it's weird to me, but I'm going to take it. So it is what it is. And that'll bring us to our next two Ultimate Fighter fights, which are the actual finale fights. First, we'll talk about Ricky Tercios versus Brady Hiestand. Ricky Tercios goes by the nickname Pretty Ricky. He's 10-2 in his career with 3 knockouts, 1 submission. He's lost 1, lost and 1 in his last 4 fights. Of course, he won by submission the last time out. He is actually 0-1 in the UFC's Dana White Contender Series. Granted, it's not the UFC's Dana White Contender Series. It's Dana White's Contender Series. But he was 0-1 on that. He lost to Boston Salmon in, like, the first episode ever. He was 1-0 in Bellator. He's making his UFC debut. Of course, 2-0 on The Ultimate Fighter. He's got 1 inch of height advantage, and he is betting off at negative 170. Hiestand's nickname is Bam Bam. He's 5-1. He's got 2 knockouts, 2 submissions. He won by submission in his last fight. He's making his UFC debut as well. Also, 2-0 on tough, and he is 6 years younger than Ricky Tercios. Betting off at negative 135. What do you think of this one?
Dude, this is just an awesome, awesome fight. Tercios, I kind of had him circled going in, had a lot of experience, but man, that guy, I mean, he was just in 2 wars on the show, especially his first fight with Dan Ortega. I believe I'm saying his last name correct, but that fight was awesome. I mean, Tercios is just super well-rounded, but Brady Hiestand, man, I think he was the youngest guy on the show, and he fought probably 2 of the most experienced guys on the show, Josh Redinghouse, and then
Vince Murdoch.
I mean, he's got a grinding style. He can take a punch. I felt like in that first fight with Josh Redinghouse, he was starting to get tired. He was getting hurt, but he just was able to push through. I just think it's a really, really even matchup. Possibly, you know, maybe number two or three best fights of the entire weekend. It is really, really good. It's going to be high action, high volume. All that being said, I'm siding with Ricky Tercios ever so slightly. I think he's very well-rounded. He's a good grappler. He's really – it seems like he's just really hard to get a hold of. So if Haistan does get takedowns, I think Tercios will be able to create scrambles to either attack submissions and then eventually sweep or get back to his feet. But expect a lot of action. I'm going Tercios by decision.
Yeah, so when we originally broke down this fight, I took Tercios. But I'm actually going to flip-flop here and take Haistan – mostly because of what you said about the scrambling. So, like, in every fight, it looked like Ricky was going to get taken down. And I'm not going to say often, but enough that you were like, man, he gets taken down a lot. And then he would hip over or he would, you know, create scrambles in any way that he possibly could. And he would always wind up in better positions. The difference maker here is I think he's fighting a better grappler than he did any of those times on the show.
I could agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, for me, the big difference maker was I went back and watched Brady Haistan just absolutely maul Vince Murdoch. Right, like, he had a tough fight with Josh Redinghouse. He did not have a tough fight with Vince Murdoch. He just mauled that dude. And for me, like, man, I thought Vince Murdoch versus Ricky Tercios was going to be a fun finale when I saw those semifinals matchup. I was like, those two are going to be fun to watch. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. This Haistan dude can just ground anybody. So after rewatching it, I'm going with the youngin', the six-year younger kid here. I think he's only 23 years old. It would be a crazy story to see him get on there. But, yeah, I like his style. And it's funny because, you know, if you've been watching the show, like we have, his mentor comes onto the show to help him, Michael Chiesa. He's kind of a Michael Chiesa fighting fuck, you know what I mean? Like, he feels like a little tiny Michael Chiesa out there.
Yeah, dude, he's a grinder, man. Like I said, I was just really impressed with the way he was able to kind of wade through the fire and push through and get those takedowns. And he has just really slick grappling like Chiesa. He's good at getting to the back and good at holding position. He's long. He's lanky. Yeah, it's a really good comparison.
Yeah, I think regardless, it's going to be an absolutely crazy fight. So,
yeah, it is.
And speaking of crazy fights, I mean, like, I don't think the other finale is going to be any less crazy, and that's Brian Battle versus Gilbert Urbina. So Battle, nicknamed Pooh Bear, 5-1 in his pro career. He's got one knockout, 3 submissions, 4 straight wins, and he's, of course, making his UFC debut. 2-0 on Tough, including that submission win over Andrei Petrovsky we talked about before. 4 inches of height, 3 inches of reach. He is betting off at -170. Urbina, meanwhile, 6-1 with 1 knockout and 2 submissions. He's never been finished in his career. He won his last fight. Although I guess saying he's never been finished is kind of, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. He was just badly knocked out by Trayshawn Gore, who had to drop out of this fight due to a knee injury in his own right. He's making his UFC debut. He's 1-1 on Tough, including that knockout loss to Trayshawn Gore. Of course, he gets this as a fill-in when Gore was hurt. He is 2 years younger and will be betting off at 135. I'm imagining this takes place on the feet in, like, a really exciting way. Who do you got here?
Yeah, props to Trayshawn Gore. I really liked his story on the show. I liked his fighting style. But you know what? I think and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think we got a better fight at the end with Gilbert Urbina stepping in and pairing in with Brian Battle. I think the fight on the feet, they both go after it. They're both long and lanky and willing to step into the fire. They're both scrappy on the ground. I would say Gilbert probably has a little bit of an advantage, but, dude, Brian Battle is one of those guys. He was the last pick, kind of like Kelvin Gastelum from the week before who won the Ultimate Fighter. He's the last pick, and he just showed that was probably the wrong way to go. I mean, he's big. He has a huge frame for the division. I really, really like, honestly, this fight as opposed to if Trayshawn Gore was in there, and I look forward to seeing Trayshawn. That's not a knock on him, but I look forward to him making his debut because he deserves it, but I think we really got fun matchmaking here.
Yeah, I think you're right. That like long, lanky reach in like what will probably transpire on the feet is probably more fun than, you know, I don't mean to knock Battle here because I also love Brian Battle, but like the safer approach from Trayshon Gore, followed by just like an absolute piston of a left hand, would probably have been less fun to watch against Brian Battle than Urbina, who is just going to be like, let's get bloody.
Yeah, those two guys are going to scramble on the feet, on the mat. It's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, and it's in a great way, too. So, yeah, I'm all about it. Both me and Jeff, though, are taking the favorite Brian Battle. How about you?
I'm going with the underdog here. I'm going with Gilbert Urbina. I think he's actually going to submit Brian Battle. I think he's going to find, like, a way to his back or find, like, a dart stroke or something, maybe in the second round. I'm going Gilbert Urbina.
I like that pick. Now, I will say this, too. Both guys made huge gains on the show. I'm going to attribute it a lot of working with Craig Jones. Those two dudes look like, in their first matches, they both look like they could grapple a little bit. In their second matches, they look like they could grapple a lot. Brian Battle being the one I saw make the biggest gains. He went from being like, oh, look, this guy's just kind of a striker who's going to get out-grappled. And then he went up against Petrovsky, and he subbed him. And
he did.
That's incredible. And, yeah, I'm just – any chance I get to throw some credit Craig Jones's way, I might as well do that. Now, we got two more fights to break down here, so I'm going to get to them in just a second. I did want to mention real quick that you can download the SGPN app now live in the App Store and the Google Play Store. It gives you easy access to all of our picks, podcasts, and news, including this here podcast right here. Don't forget to toss us an app review and download the SGPN app today. So the one we're going to talk about next, Kevin Lee versus Daniel Rodriguez, which actually I'm being told is taking place just before those finale fights that we just talked about. Once again, guys changing divisions. We got Kevin Lee coming back to 170 pounds for better or worse. He is 18-6 in his career with 3 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's 11-6 in the UFC, 1-3 in his last 4, including get submitted his last time out, which was in March of 2020. He, of course, like I mentioned before, coming up from 155, 3 inches of reach. On his side, he is 6 years younger than Daniel Rodriguez, betting off at negative 150. D-Rod, on the other hand, 15-2 with 8 knockouts and 1 submission. He's never been finished in his own career. He's 5-1 in the UFC, including 2 straight. He picked up a TKO win his last time out. He's kind of taking this fight on short notice. Was 1-0 on the Contender Series, 1-0 in Bellator. He did have a kickboxing and boxing background before then. He's going to have some height advantage here. And it looks like he has the striking stats and 2 times the active striking stats in his favor on this one. He's betting off at plus 120. Break it down. Who do you like in this one?
Hey, can we clap it up for both of these guys really quick for them making this fight happen? Again, Danny Rodriguez is a guy looking for an opportunity like this. So for Kevin Lee to take this fight, props to him. A really tough one to call, man. I really like what Danny Rodriguez is doing on the feet. He's got a lot of power. He's got slick striking. We just don't know where Kevin Lee is. Kevin Lee is one of those guys where he's shown flashes where you look at him and you're like, wow, this guy might be a future champion of the division. And then you've seen other times where it's not been that. We've seen him gasp before. We've seen him stumble before. We've seen him hurt before. We've seen him sub before. So I'm going to ride actually with the underdog here. I'm going to ride with Daniel Rodriguez. I think that his striking is going to be enough to keep Kevin Lee off him. I don't think the takedowns are going to come easy for Kevin Lee, and we've seen him hurt before. I think Daniel Rodriguez gets the biggest win of his career and actually finishes Kevin Lee via strikes.
Man, I think that could totally happen. I think the tough thing, like you said, about picking a Kevin Lee fight is, where's Kevin Lee? Like, who knows who he – what
right,
what
yeah,
are you
– I mean, he'd come out there and smoke Danny Rodriguez. We're like, oh, yeah, that guy is that good.
Oh, right. We were really dumb forever picking against Kevin
exactly.
Lee. You know, like, you mean the guy who Dr. Savaged Edson Barboza? Or do you mean the guy who rear-naked choked Michael Chiesa cold? Like, do you mean the guy who TKO'd Jake Matthews? Yeah, like that guy. Or do you mean the guy who looked like an absolute buffoon fighting Rafael Dos Anjos?
Yeah.
You know, like
fell into a guillotine against Charles Oliveira, you know? It's,
yeah,
it's
like
go up and down.
In the easiest fashion. Or he head kicked Gregor Gillespie cold.
Yes, like knocked him dead.
These are all the same guy somehow. I don't know how to pick a Kevin Lee fight, but I'm going to pick Kevin Lee. I'm going to go opposite of you two in this one. I think we haven't seen enough of Daniel Rodriguez's wrestling defense here, and I think Kevin Lee being smart here is going to go to the well, which I think is don't box with Daniel Rodriguez, which I think ultimately is the smart move. I think he has enough success here that he wins this one. And that brings us to the main event, the one we've been pining to talk about, and that's Edson Barboza versus Giga Chikadze. Barboza 22-9 in his career, 13 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 16-9 in the UFC, 2-3 in his last 5, although he has won 2 straight. He is a former 155er, as I said, that is the theme of the show, coming down to 145, and since then he's been 2-1. He's a Muay Thai champion, he had a whole bunch of kickboxing fights. He's going to have 1 inch of reach advantage and the active striking and surprising grappling stats in his favor, although Giga just doesn't really have any. And he is betting off at -115. Giga Chikadze is 13-2 in his career. He's 8 knockouts, 1 submission, 6-0 in the UFC, including 2 straight knockouts, 8 straight wins on his record overall, 0-1 on Contender Series, 0-1 in World Series of Fighting. See, World Series of Fighting, better than the UFC. he has 1 inch of height advantage. He's 2 years younger, and he has the striking stats in his favor. He's betting off at -110, so pretty much even money right now on Barboza and Chikadze. It's going to be fun regardless, but who you got in this one?
Jesus, man. Have you ever gone and looked back at Edson Barboza's resume?
It's really good.
God.
It's really good.
Dude, and you got to go back years. I mean, and he's only 35 years old. This is probably the hardest fight, I think, to call this weekend. And it's because both guys are just – you know what they're going to do, right? Like, neither guy, I don't think, is going to be looking for takedowns. It's whoever is going to win on the feet. And for me, the guy that I think in my head is going to win on the feet is Edson Barboza. And that's because I think he's going to be the guy that's more willing to take chances, to mix it up a bit. I think Giga is a very good rhythm striker. But again, if I look at Giga's record, I just don't think – at least in MMA, again, he has an extensive kickboxing record. But at least in MMA, we just haven't seen him fight the level of Edson Barboza, who – to many people's surprises, mine including, at his age, went down a weight and has looked extremely good. I think he should have won against Dan Ige. I think the best guy on Giga's record is probably Cub Swanson. But again, 2020 Cub Swanson is a lot different than the Cub Swanson of old, or 2021 Cub Swanson, I should say. So I'm riding with Barboza. I think it's going to be an extremely technical, high-speed chess match. But I'm favoring Barboza here. I like his experience a little bit better, and I think he's going to be the guy that steps out of the realm of comfort a little bit more and goes for it, because we've seen Barboza in just many firefights.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to differ with you on this pick, but I'm going to use a lot of your rationale for why I'm differing, is that I think you're right. I think Edson Barboza is the one who steps out of his comfort zone, throws more, gets a little bit wild, especially early on. And ultimately, I think that that's going to cost him later in the fight, because Giga is not that. Giga keeps himself safe. As long as he plays good defense there, I think he's going to be way fresher in the later rounds, which means he's only going to have to steal one of the first 3 rounds. I think he's going to coax in the championship rounds. And granted, I don't have a lot of basis to go on that, because neither of these guys have been really deep into 5-round fights. And, you know, you could say something about Giga and his kickboxing fights and how those sometimes are longer, you know, overall in the amount of time. But I do just think, like, his technical approach and the fact that he doesn't use a lot of energy, and it's also his natural weight class. I know we've said that Edson Barboza looks better down a weight class, but in that Dan Ige fight, which, by the way, I also thought he won, part of the reason the judges didn't think so is he kind of tired late in the fight, and it cost him a little bit, at least on the judges' scorecards. Not on mine. I still think he won, but, like, on the judges' scorecards it did. So I think that that could play into this fight. There's a reason why it's basically a pick'em, is that this is a coin flip, because there's so many unknowns about Giga Chikadze, and there's so many unknowns about, no unknowns, about Edson Barboza, but, like, when you bring those two things together, the fact that we don't know enough about one of them makes this a really weird fight to try to call. Ultimately, I would say this is a fight I'm avoiding if I'm gambling, because the odds are close, and I don't really have a good reason to love Barboza or Chikadze. But I'm going to go with Chikadze on this one. So that puts a wrap in our – oh, by the way, Jeff is also riding with me in Giga Chikadze. That puts a wrap in our 12 fights. Let me quickly, as I put the intern on him, as we were talking on some of the parlay – or the props we liked over the course of the fight. So we did mention that we like Andrei Petrovsky by submission, despite the fact that he is a negative 550 favorite on this card. If you also like Andrei Petrovsky by submission, you can get him at plus 110, which seems kind of crazy.
Nice.
Yeah, like Gilmore has been submitted all four of his losses, three in his pro career and one on the Ultimate Fighter. He's fighting a guy who submits people like it's his job. And for some reason, that's the odds. So get plus money on that one. Don't waste any time. Mana Martinez, who we talked about being an absolute knockout ace, is betting off. If you want his knockout prop, negative 110. So despite the fact that he is a negative 290 favorite, you can get him at even money if you go after that one. And then there was one. We liked the under in the Abdul Razak Hassan fight. If you say this fight will be under 2.5 rounds, it's betting off at negative 120. So damn near even money there on Abdul Razak Hassan or Alessio De Chirico on the 2.5 round under. Mano Martinez by KO and Andrei Petrovsky by submission. So we're going to put a pin in this one at this time. As always, I would like to remind you guys that you can follow me on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland. You can follow Jeff, who is usually the head host of this, at Jeff Box Writer. And, of course, you can follow our temporary co-host, Kurt Chase Patrick, on Twitter at KCPKO, or his podcast, the Fix Fight Podcast, at Fix Fights Pod. We also want to remind you guys to check out all the writing over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, where you can find all kinds of good pieces in all sports imaginable. If you want a little bit more specific MMA content, you can check out MMA-Manifesto.com, where Jeff is the editor, and you occasionally get to see little bits and pieces from me as well. And, of course, make sure to subscribe to the MMA Gambling Specific feed, because we are no longer going to have all of our shows on the general SGPN feed. So if you're listening to this in that feed right now, get on over and subscribe to our actual feed, where you can like, review, leave us some nice stars down there. We certainly do appreciate it, so that you're getting every single one of our possible episodes. And once again, thank you to my co-host, Kurt J. Patrick. He will be back Sunday to review this card, to talk about how me, him, and Jeff all did, which is, of course, give you nothing but winners. So until Sunday, I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is Kurt Chase Patrick, and we'll catch you then.